Tango Tango Papa 1902, March 26, 2015.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this afternoon from Edwardsville, Illinois. Been doing pretty good with the videos. There's been a night or two where I ended up not putting out a video, but as I've said before, the videos, ironically now, the videos are pretty easy to do. They're fairly quick and easy. and the audio podcast, recording an audio podcast, is more time consuming and more involved at this point. And I just got to pop up here. Let's see. Let's postpone that. There we go. Audio podcasts are more involved, relatively speaking, and so they've suffered. And kind of, if I have time and I feel like doing one, feel compelled to do one, then I'll do it. I'm not going to, as I said before, it would be easy to say, well, I'm just going to end the audio podcast, but I don't really want to end it. But on the other hand, I don't. I'm not going to make the promise that I'm going to, at one time I was doing pretty much one a day, and I did that for a long time. And at this point, the motivation is just not there to do it that often. So I want to keep the, I don't want to end it. So I want to keep the podcast ongoing. But at the other, on the other side of the coin, it's just going to be kind of haphazard, hit and miss when I feel compelled to do it. And so, as opposed to just ending it. I'll continue to do it, but... And the only way that it's going to end is I'll tell you when it's going to... If I decide to end it, I'm going to tell you that it's ended. But otherwise, it is ongoing. As I say, I will continue to do it. In any case, I've been staying very busy with work. Things seem very busy. At least I'm very busy, about as busy as I want to be most of the time. There's a lot of times now where I have maybe a 10-hour break, and that's about it. And so that a 10-hour break allows me enough time easily to put together a video and upload it and get plenty of sleep and... That part works quite well, but in other words, I've got time to sleep and do the normal things, and the rest of the time I'm working. Been staying very busy. Right now I'm at Edwardsville, Illinois, and... So I'm going to be leaving a little bit later this afternoon. I have a load that I pick it up here in Edwardsville, which is outside of St. Louis. And then that load delivers to Clarksville, Arkansas after midnight tonight. Today's Thursday, so it delivers after midnight. So in other words, early Friday morning. And then once, if everything goes properly at Clarksville, Arkansas, then that should be a drop and hook. And then I will, as I say, if everything goes properly, then I will be able to drop and hook at Clarksville and make it home probably, let's say, 2 to 3 o'clock in the morning, Friday morning. And then I'm going to take 5 complete days off. So I'll be off Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And then go back to work next Thursday, April the 2nd. By the way, April the 3rd is my birthday, and I'll be 60, which is hard to believe, but I guess not, because time, one thing, you know, time keeps going by, and that's just the, I guess, part of the nature of this world, is that time does continue to go by, and you either die or you age. So it's kind of an inevitable thing. So anyway, at this point, once I make it home, I don't remember. I'd have to actually go back and check and see when I came back to work, but I've been... seems like I've been working this time. It's been well over 3 weeks. I would have to actually, as I said, have to go back. I don't remember exactly what day I came back to work. But I think it's going to be pretty close to a month. A month will have elapsed this time. And, now this time while I'm home, I do have a, dental cleaning appointment. I believe that's on Tuesday. Have that Tuesday morning. And then otherwise, I'll just be kind of doing the normal thing. It's useful to kind of get away from the truck for a few days. Kind of forget about it for about 5 days in a row. And then be ready to go back to work. So, it's weather-wise, it's been, we've had some warm days, and then it's been, there's been some cold days, and when I got to, here to Edwardsville yesterday afternoon, it was about, well, when I got here, it was 57 degrees. The temperature had already started dropping. Earlier it was 60, and then when I was in southern Indiana and Kentucky, it was actually about 71, according to the truck thermometer. So once I made it here to Edwardsville, it was already, the temperature was dropping, and after I was here for a while, I came, there's a nearby Flying J truck stop, and so I parked, you know, I bobtailed over here. And yesterday evening, then it started raining, and it rained quite a bit. Looks like it also rained quite a bit at home. It actually stormed pretty good. There were some areas in northwest Arkansas got some, I guess, some pretty good hail, as well as there were reported tornadoes. Now, none of there may have been some hail at my house. I'm not, if there was, I don't think it really damaged anything. I was texting my neighbor a little bit earlier, and he said that everything looked okay. Now, of course, I have cameras. I have 4 cameras set up at the house. 2 of them are aimed at the interior, and 2 of them are aimed out of windows on opposite sides of the house. And I could see that there was, the storming was going on. And after, especially after it got dark, it was difficult to tell what was happening. Except now, out of the one, the exceptions to that were some lightning that would show up occasionally in the live streaming video. And then on the one side of the house, there was enough, the rain was coming down hard enough, it was causing sort of like the water to sort of run down the slope a little bit. And that was causing a reflection of the neighbor's, the neighbor has a yard light up on a pole from the electric company, and that was causing a reflection in the water that was kind of running down the slope towards my driveway. So I could tell that that was kind of going on, but it's spring, and we have this kind of weather where it's sort of cool, and then when I checked just now, it's 48 degrees outside, and they're at my house. But so I turned. Of course, I have that Nest remote control thermostat that I've had for 2 or 3 years at this point, and so I remembered, hey, I better turn the furnace on. It was about 59 degrees in the house. So by the time I make it home, it should be warmed up. I think it's supposed to get up to 55 degrees there at home today. So it should, if the sun pops out, that'll help it. That'll help kind of raise the temperature up as well as the furnace being on. So won't be going home to a cold house. So once I make it home, I'm planning on working some more on my little home theater room, and so it's possible that I will go ahead and build a screen, or at least start that. I don't know. Need to do some actual measurement and find out exactly how big the screen needs to be. And then once I've determined exactly the size that I want that will work, then I can start deciding what materials I'm going to use, and it's possible I may have to order some materials, depending on what I finally decide. I don't know if I'm going to actually build a screen out of the so-called blackout cloth. Don't know if I'll do that, or the other possibility is to actually use, one of the possibilities is to use masonite as a surface to paint, or the back of paneling is another option. Just really cheap, the backside of a really cheap piece of paneling, piece or pieces of paneling, to form the screen material, and then paint that. So I haven't actually decided yet. I may need to do some. As I say, I need to find out exactly the screen size that I need, and then maybe do a little experimenting as far as what materials might work best. So, got more work to do. One of the things I did go ahead and order was an HD tuner. If you remember back during a few years ago, back during the transition to digital television from analog, for a period of time they sold these units that they were digital tuners essentially, and you would plug those into your analog television, and it would be able to display the digital signals because you had a digital tuner. So I they're still selling those things, but that with a twist. Most of them, there are a lot of them, have HDMI out, and so I was able to look on Amazon, and I found a unit that sells for $38, and it had, of course, it had quite a few reviews, and most of them were pretty positive reviews. So you attach this thing to your antenna, which I have a large outdoor antenna that's about 50 feet up in the air on a rotor, and so I'm able to get a nice variety of digital television stations that come in pretty well. And so I've got that distributed in my house, so I am able to I'll be able to plug the antenna into this digital tuner, and then attach that to the projector. And the other interesting thing is this tuner. Comes with a remote control, and it plugs into HDMI, and also you can plug in up to a 2 terabyte hard drive into it via USB, and it becomes a DVR, which is also pretty interesting. Now you can buy over the air DVRs that are already integrated, that are already packaged, and some of those will sell for about $150. But so in this case, I saw this one for $38, and all I'm really actually interested in is the digital tuner itself, and not so much the DVR capability, because I've already got that with a Mac Mini. If I want it, I've got that capability to digitally record over-the-air television if I want to, and most of the time I don't. I can if I want to, I can. So, but the main thing I was looking for was just the ability to, and especially for $38. The ability to watch over-the-air TV channels if I want to. And for $38, might as well. That's easy. So, got that. And so I'll be kind of playing, obviously, this time. I'll be playing quite a bit with the projector. And so that should keep me occupied this time while I'm home. So other than that, there's not a whole lot going on. As I say, I've been very busy with work, and the other thing I have is the Pico projector that I bring with me in the truck, and I'm getting a lot of really good use out of that, daily use, in fact, and that has really the ability to, especially to stream directly from the internet. Has really been a that's really a great use of not only streaming, but the you know, projection itself, because it normally I don't bring any television along with me. Otherwise, I've been watching I would watch video on my phone, excuse me, or the iPad Air that I have, which, and I still do watch a fair amount of video on those, especially if I'm waiting or kind of depending on where I'm at. If I'm in a restaurant or whatever, then I might watch something on my phone. But it makes a nice addition to be able to, you know, because once from the position I'm projecting from currently, I end up with about a I don't know. I haven't actually measured it, but it's at least, a 40 to 45 inch diagonal image. And that actually works really pretty well. So getting a lot of good use out of that. So in the past number of podcasts, I've been talking quite a bit about idolatry. And idolatry, we have a tendency to kind of think, what is idolatry? Well, you know, there's a tendency to kind of compartmentalize it and think, well, I'm not doing that. I don't idolize anything. And we think of the idols as kind of described in the Bible. People make a little statue to some goddess or something and put, you know, they put it in a corner and they make a little shrine and what have you. And that's idolatry. And certainly that can be idolatry. That is a form of idolatry. But it goes beyond that. People are doing that all the time. I see idolatry happening everywhere. And, you know, it's interesting. It's one of the evidences of idolatry. I've often wondered why, let's say you have someone that's an alcoholic, and they, and this is a good example, they're an alcoholic, and an alcoholic is basically, they're a slave, you know, and it doesn't have to be limited to alcohol. It can be, and often is, food of various kinds. But they're enslaved, they're sort of an enslaved idolater. Whether they like it or not, they're kind of idolizing alcohol. And once you're an idolater, you're a slave. All who sin are slaves. But if they're able to quit drinking, let's say they're a reformed alcoholic and they've quit drinking, well, then all of a sudden, most of them are very down on alcohol. They demonize it. It's, you know, terrible, horrible, this horrible, wicked thing. And that behavior is replicated over and over again. You have people that, let's say you have someone that has lost a lot of weight, or they've changed their diet, or they've decided that they're, you know, they're really now they're into physical fitness, and so then they spend a lot of time kind of demonizing their former behaviors. And what I realized, you wonder, why do people do that? And of course people come up with theories. Well, they can't do it, and they're jealous, and so therefore they have to demonize it in order to kind of justify in their own mind that they have to stay away from it. And those are sort of, you have kind of in a sense, that's kind of like jumping through mental hoops in order to try to understand something or kind of come up with a sort of a manufactured explanation. What's really going on, When someone has to demonize a past behavior like that, let's say that they're, again, it could be an alcoholic or someone that's changed, they've really changed their diet and they've lost weight, and they have, or let's say you have someone that becomes a vegetarian, and then they start, they really have to demonize people that eat meat and demon, you know, come up with all kinds of nasty little things about, you know, nasty little sayings to try to shame people into, you know, in other words, they almost become evangelists for, not only for vegetarianism, but then they become evangelists against people that are eating meat, and they want to force, you know, kind of force their behavior on everyone. What that is, kind of what's going on, is that demonizing a former behavior is evidence. It's really simple. It's evidence of idolatry. Because they were enslaved to what they idolized. And so they were able to shed that one and switch it to something else. And then therefore they have to... Evidence of idolatry... Idolatry always requires something. It requires demonization. Something has to be demonized. I've used the example, kind of the modern, the big example that's right in front of all of us is this kind of ongoing idolatry of a mass idolatry of Apple. And Apple products, Apple computer, Apple products, Apple Incorporated. And so the idol, Apple is the idol, and it requires a demon. And the demon in the past, the demon was Microsoft, and the demon was Windows. But in the age of the iPhone, the demon is Google. The demon is Android. The demon is Samsung. And that's kind of the example in the Apple world. By the way, that new headquarters that Apple is building, is that a temple to a false god? Could that be a temple to Satan? Something to think about. So anyway, Apple is a really good example of idolatry. And so you see this same behavior. You see it in the kind of the war between Ford and Chevrolet. Idolatry was involved, and people have kind of moved on. There's probably still some people that are idolizing the brands in that way, but over time people kind of move on, and new generations of people find sort of new false gods. But the false gods are everywhere, and it doesn't have to be a brand. It can be anything. It literally can be and is anything you can think of. Anything can be abused. Anything, and I mean anything, can be turned into idolatry. And you see it often. That's what's wrong in churches. That's why, for example, that the church in the modern age, especially, has failed. The country, you wonder why. How did we go over the cliff? Especially in the last 30 to 40 years, we've really gone over the cliff morally. How did that happen? In the presence of a church, with all these churches around, how does that happen? And it's because they weren't really churches. They weren't really effective as kind of transmitting the message. They have the words about the truth, but they've basically idolized it. And you can tell when people idolize something, especially if they're parents and they're idolizing something. They idolize, make false idols of the religion, and you can tell what happens to their kids. The kids live with them. The kids see that they're fake and phony. And they kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater, and then you end up with the immoral, the completely bankrupt, morally bankrupt society we live in the morally bankrupt world we live in. And the religion, you have these, the preachers and so on and so forth, and then the kind of the hypocrites that idolize them. And it's all empty. Even though they've got the words about the truth, they've ended up using everything in all of those elements they've used in the wrong way. And they don't even realize that they've done it. That's the beauty of if you can take the words about the truth, the thing that if you really deeply understood it and you wanted to understand it, it can lead you to the truth. You can take that and sort of wrap yourself in it the same way people sort of wrap themselves in a flag and, you know, appear to be patriotic, and yet they're really not. We have politicians that do that all the time. They don't really love the country. They don't really love America, for example, or whatever other country, but they don't love the ideas, but yet they kind of wrap themselves in the accoutrements and make it difficult for anyone to challenge them. And so parents do that with their kids. It's been going on for generations. There's a tendency for that to happen anyway. And so we have idolatry everywhere. Idolatry is all over the place. And again, the evidence of it is that it requires a demon. Idolatry always requires something. It requires demons, one or more demons. Whether it's people that are idolizing brands, you know, you pick one brand, and you know, you idolize Ford, and then Chevy is the demon, or you idolize. Let's say you idolize. You know, it could be anything. there's so many different. I'm trying to look for another example or think of a different example. There's plenty of them. You know, you pick one thing, and whatever the competitor is, that's the one you demonize. So it's everywhere. It's with, you can have people that, it could be brands of food, for example. It could be almost anything you can think of. You have groups of people that will idolize it, and then they pick, you know, whatever else it is that's the demon, that's the devil. Got to run that down. That's horrible. Got it, you know, and it's everywhere. It's really remarkable. Now, the problem with false idols, with using something in that way, and even though you're enslaved to it, the problem with it is whether you're aware that you're kind of a slave, or you might think you're kind of happy being a slave to whatever it is, the problem is that why do you idolize? What is the point of idolizing something? The point of idolizing something is that it takes you away from reality. It takes you away from the reality of your conscience. Your conscience is there to remind you of what you could have or could be. Your conscience is there to remind you of what you've fallen from. And it's always there. And it's it's virtually impossible to escape from it. But you end up using idols, and again you're enslaved to whatever it is you idolize. You end up using that as a way of driving a wedge between yourself and that guilty conscience. And it's kind of like kind of an example would be eating to get rid of the guilt of overeating, or drinking to get rid of the guilt of drinking. And you end up with a larger and larger and larger guilty conscience. So with this the widespread idolization that's going on today, that's how you wonder, well, how is it that people can kill each other and they can go to war and they can do all these things to each other? How can that be? And that's what enables that is the idolization. Because the only thing that restrains us, the only thing that really separates us as human beings from animals, and whether you want to believe this or not, if you don't want to believe it, what I'm about to say, if you don't want to believe what I'm saying, shut the podcast off and tune into Dancing with the Stars or something. You know, don't bother me. You know, this isn't a debate society. So the only thing that separates us as human beings from all the other creatures that inhabit this earth, there's one thing. You know, you look at our DNA as human beings, you compare our DNA to monkeys, and it's 98% at least the same. It really is very, very similar. And, you know, so there's not that big of a difference physically as far as the structure of our cells, the structure of our DNA. There really isn't that big of a difference between us and, you know, pick your favorite chimpanzee. Not that much difference. The only real difference, you know, people say, oh, well, we're more intelligent. Well, are we more intelligent? I think, yeah, you could say probably yes, we are. We have bigger brains compared to our body, you know, our body mass size. That's not really the whole extent of it. The only thing that really separates us from, let's say, chimpanzees or any other animal is human beings have a direct connection, potential direct connection to our Creator. Now, I know there are people that argue and they say, oh, you're, well, who, what's the gold standard? And it's my gold standard. Everybody has their own gold standard. And how are we going to know? Well, I maintain that it is possible to know. If you want to know, if it's within you to know, if it's in your structure to know, then you can know. But if you don't want to know, if something is missing from you, in other words, and you don't want to know, then you won't know. Something's missing. Am I saying you're doomed? I'm not. It's not for me to say. What I am saying is that if you want to know, it is possible to know. If you want to know your Creator, it is possible, absolutely possible, to know what that standard is, to know your Creator. And so if you want to know, if you really want to know your Creator, mention it once in a while. You go to my website, truckertompodcast.com. Up at the top, there's a link that says meditation. Click on that link. That'll take you to a page where I've got, I don't know, probably 3 or 4 files that are hosted on my server. You can right-click on those MP3 files, download them to your computer, your smartphone, burn them onto CD, however. And those files, it will teach you a very simple meditation technique. And the meditation technique is, there's a line in the Bible, "Be still and know that I am God." And this is just a very simple but very extremely effective way of learning how to be still. And it will prove to you that you are not your thoughts. People think, well, I am my thoughts. No, you're not. You're human beings. We have whatever we are. we have this point of awareness, and I maintain that, you know, you can say, well, it's mystical or whatever, have at it, go away, don't bother me. I'm not going to argue with you. But we do have this point of awareness that is above and beyond what a cat has or what a dog has. Because a dog is aware of its environment. A dolphin is aware of the water. And, you know, it jumps out into the air and it's aware of its environment. And it could even be aware of human beings. And your dog, you know, dogs are very intelligent. They can be aware of their masters. But they're not aware of their own existence. And there's a you can say, well, that's just semantics. Well, there's a difference. If you want to argue with me, I don't want you as my friend. You're not my friend. If you want to arrive at the truth, that's a different, then we can have a discussion. I'm willing to discuss. But I'm not going to argue. Because people like that will come up with excuse after excuse after excuse. Go jump in the lake. So. But. It's interesting because if we're separated from whatever that is, that knowing, that source, that true source of identity, if we're born kind of separated from that, but if we're separated from that, then we end up becoming externalized and kind of reacting to the external environment. And, of course, the more we react to the environment, the more the environment ends up affecting us. And we end up with a sort of a skewed version of reality. A skewed version of the world. And more importantly, we end up with a skewed version of how do you know the difference between right and wrong? It's called epistemology. How do you know the difference between right and wrong? How do you know what's right? And so we've got generations of people now that are living in kind of a false reality, and it's probably the, you know, I think every generation has probably a substantial number of people that are kind of trapped in this false world, and now, you know, I've made fun of them a little bit. I've called them, you know, the basement trolls. We've kind of got a basement troll generation where people have spoiled their kids. Parked them in front of the television. Oh, here's the Xbox. Here's the PlayStation. Here's the computer. Get out of my hair. Don't bother me. I'm in my own fantasy world. Don't bother me. You're just unwanted byproduct of sex. Get out of my hair. Here, have some money. And in the meantime, don't teach them how to work. Send them off to the public school to have their minds screwed even farther. You've started them on the path to their minds being screwed up, and then send them off to school and it's made even worse. So we have a whole generation of people like that. And they're worthless. And then, of course, you have people that they believe, really, when it comes down to it, you know, human beings want to play God. And That's our problem. We have this proclivity to want to play God, and so many people really believe, if you think about it, they really believe that they can play God better than the real God can, which is absurd. We didn't create ourselves, therefore we can't fix ourselves. We didn't create ourselves, we cannot make ourselves better. It's not possible. All we can do is make ourselves worse. And so your accurate perception of the world is destroyed. It's disrupted. It's corrupted by a corrupted sense of right and wrong. And all I have to, you know, all someone has to do is get you to resent. And we have this proclivity to want to resent anyway. That's how we play God in our own mind. We resent, kind of hurling the mental thunderbolts, as if our thoughts, if we were God and our thoughts could destroy, strike someone dead, people, places, and things. It's usually people, but it can also be places and things. That's where we make our mistake. And then we think, well, we can turn this negative into a positive. No, you can't. You're going to play God better than the real God can? Is that it? Is that what you're saying? Of course that's what you're saying. It's what you think. Or you want to believe. You want to believe you can do that. So we play God by resenting, and then of course the next step after that is to be proud of what it turns you into, what the resentment turns you into. Then, you know, people, oh, we'll have safety in numbers. We'll have a pride march. We'll have an abortion pride march. Proud to be aborters. We're proud we've killed our babies. We're going to have a march. It's really noble that we killed our babies. It's really a noble thing. It's ridiculous. So now we've got this, we've had all these generations of people that are really have a warped view of what reality is. And inevitably, we'll end up with a dictator of some sort. It's inevitable. You look at the history of every country that's ever been, and it turns into a dictatorship. Sooner or later, it becomes a dictatorship, and then whatever was there before is gone. Whatever noble, you know, it could be democracy or whatever, is gone. And we in the United States of America right now are on that point. We're at that point. And I personally think that things are going to get bad for a lot of people. They already are for a lot of people. But there's a big bulk of people that really maybe they haven't been affected so much. And they think, oh, well, let's go back to partying. You know, it's like after 9/11. I believe 9/11 was kind of a bit of a wake-up call. And it didn't take too long, and people were right back to their same old ways. Same thing in 2008, when the stock market crashed. A lot of people, you know, kind of got shocked by that. And then the bad economy that followed it. And they just kind of, you know, back to dancing with the stars. Don't bother me. Keep reality at bay. Inevitably, reality will catch up, whether you like it or not. It will catch up. And you have all of these people that are living in a kind of a fantasy dream world. Someone else is supporting them. You got half the people maybe that are working and producing goods and services, and then you have this other half that are worthless or useless. They're producing nothing of value. Nothing that's useful. They're doing, and if they do, many of them do work, it's useless work. Or it's work that's counterproductive, in fact. So, inevitably, the equation stops working at some point. Inevitably, you end up with, you know, if you take the money out of the equation and you have people that are working and producing goods and services, then you have a certain amount that aren't, but everybody's consuming. Well, if the more people you have working and producing, the overall, the better the lifestyle gets for everyone. But when that number goes down, it diminishes and diminishes and diminishes, and you have all these worthless basement trolls that are useless. They've been made into useless human beings by their parents and the school system. Then you end up with fewer people that are actually producing anything, and a bunch of parasites. And essentially, if the parasite population, you have an overpopulation of parasites, it's kind of like you have a swarm of locusts. Well, sooner or later, you know, the field or whatever that the swarm of locusts are eating, that's gone, and then most of the locusts die. So I think sometime in the near future, and I can't really predict, I think it's going to be towards the end of 2015 is what I believe personally, but I think it's going to get bad economically. I think there's some major shocks that are on the horizon. And I mean major shocks. There are a lot of people that have no clue how to take care of themselves. Someone else, they're like the baby bird in the nest with the mouth stuck straight up waiting for mama to come along and put a worm in it. At least the mama bird is smart enough to eventually push the baby out. And then it either sinks or swims and survives on its own. But with human beings, that's rarely, in fact, the case. They won't push the birds out of the nest. They just, oh, well, here, we'll make a place in the basement for you. Here, you poor thing. You know, I got to keep putting the worm in your mouth even though you're 40 years old. Or 50 years old in some cases, or older. So we've got a lot of useless, worthless people that have no clue. Someone's cared for them. Basically, they've cared for them their entire lives. They might as well just be, it's kind of like the equivalent of someone that's just laid in bed their entire lives and their limbs atrophy and they can't even walk or do anything. You know, someone else has to, take them to the bathroom. Maybe even feed them. So there's a big shock coming. I believe this world is a halfway house between heaven and hell. And so there's always some hell. Sometimes there's a lot of hell. It kind of goes up and down like a sine wave, and there's always some heaven. And there's a bunch of people in the middle. And I think the hell is about to increase. It's about to go up dramatically for a lot of people. The rug is about to be pulled out from underneath a lot of people. You know, kind of the mental rug. They're about to be dumped out of the nests are about to be overturned, in other words. The basements are about to flood. So I think it's important, you know, this meditation that's on my website, I can't promise it'll help everybody. I do believe it will help most people if they give it a try. But then if you find that you know, the very first time you try it, if you find that it helps you, it's up to you to continue it. Or you can't just do it once and then that's it and you're going to get the benefit from it. It doesn't work that way. You've got to want, the bottom line is you've got to have the motivation. And I can't motivate people. I'm not people's motivator. I've never wanted to be anyone's motivator. I could never be a boss, for example. You've got to have your own motivation. And if you don't have it, too bad for you. Maybe you need to suffer some more. That's really the purpose of it. The purpose of suffering is so you wake up. You want to find out, you know, what is suffering? You know, in a sense, suffering is you've got this model of what you think the world is that, you know, kind of in your mind, in your brain. You've got this model of what the world is. And somehow, you know, when you're suffering, there's in part you could say, well, there's a mismatch between what's in your brain, the model that is in your brain and how the world works and how you know the difference between right and wrong, there's a mismatch between that and what's actually out there. And so therefore, suffering is good. If you find yourself walking barefooted through, when I was a kid, you know, I loved to go around barefooted, and we lived, born and raised in Kansas, and you had these, you'd be walking around in the grass or whatever, and you'd have these stickers they call goat heads. At least that's what we call them, and I think that, you know, depending on what area of the country you're in, you have these stickers, and they stick in the bottom of your foot. If you find yourself suddenly walking through a goat head patch of goat heads, you better start paying attention and figure out, well, what's the deal? What's this sticking in the bottom of my foot? Where's this pain coming from? What's causing this pain? Maybe I better pay attention to where I'm walking. Or better yet, maybe I better get some shoes on. So there's a point to suffering. Suffering is good. Suffering is, as I say, in part, it's a mismatch between what we believe the world is versus what it actually is. There's a dissonance. Now, when I run into something that causes me pain like that, whether it's physical pain or mental pain, I have a, for whatever reason, I want to find out why. I don't want to just kill the pain. Just get rid of the pain. I want to be able to walk through the goat heads and just be barefooted because I like being barefooted. And just, you know, kind of anesthetize myself to the pain, kind of make myself unaware of the pain. I want to know what's going on. I want to know what caused it. And I want to know, in other words, why am I feeling pain? So give that meditation a try, and as I say, it's up to you to continue with it. And that meditation can bring you to a state of objectivity, where you can really be objective to the world. And what does that mean? That means that it kind of brings into alignment the model that you have as a human being, that your brain has. It sort of brings that into alignment with the real world, both seen and unseen. There's plenty of elements in this world that affect us directly we can't see them with our eyes. You can't smell them with your nose. You can't feel them with your hand. But nonetheless, they're very real. And you can't fix your own model. You know, if you think about it, the brain is kind of it's encased in the dark. It's inside a bone structure. It's encased in the dark. The only information it gets is information that's coming in from, you know, through nerves from the outside world. It represents light and feeling and heat and smell and sound. And somehow that brain is able to construct a model of the world and actually communicate with other people. And it actually constructs models of other people, if you think about it. How do you know what someone else is feeling? Because you've kind of created a little model of them in your mind or in your brain somewhere. It's really in your brain somewhere. You've created a model of them. And either that model is accurate or it's false. So meditation, this meditation technique helps you to become objective. And as I say, objectivity, what is objectivity? Becoming objective is the process of whatever it is that breathes life into us, whatever it is that makes us aware, that gives us this awareness as human beings, because we are a point of awareness, whatever gives us that also is, you know, constructs our identity, if we let it. And you're either looking for that or not. And if you're not, you're SOL. Go back to Dancing with the Stars. If you're not looking for that, if you're not looking for the real thing, go back to your fake world. It's shattering. Go back to your shattered world. So that becoming objective really involves a kind of in-breathing directly from the Creator. Now, it's interesting, if you look at the world of quantum physics, you know, all matter is, you know, there's, you know, the Einstein equation, matter, energy equivalence. Matter is energy and energy is matter. It's just kind of in a different form. So this matter that seems, you know, my hand, hand, for example, you squeeze your hand, you make a fist. It seems very solid, but it's actually energy that's kind of held in a, somehow there's these mysterious forces that kind of hold that together and make it appear to be solid matter, but it's really energy. You think about that, that's really weird. How can that be? Furthermore, you know, we know that it's energy. And yet somehow we're able to kind of, some people are able to sort of trick themselves into thinking, oh, everything's physical and there's no, even though that the physical matter is made up of energy that's kind of held together by these mysterious forces, somehow we can, it's just there is no God. We're just all monkeys kind of clinging to a rock on a, you know, kind of a meaningless trip to nowhere. Tune into Dancing with the Stars. It'll make as you cling to the rock that's on a trip to nowhere, it'll make your voyage a little happier, maybe. Probably not. In fact, not. So, anyway, that's on my website. Give it a try. It's up to you to try it. It's up to you to continue with it. Can't do it for you. I won't be your motivator. Not anybody's guru, and I absolutely refuse to be that. And again, I'm not here to argue with anybody either. You either take it or leave it. So, anyway, let's see, it's 2:24. So probably leave here in another maybe hour to 2 hours. I don't know. And then see if I can, you know, the point is I want to get to Clarksville, Arkansas about midnight or so, or it's got to be after midnight, and then do the drop and hook, and then, as I say, if everything goes right, go on home. So if everything goes right, I should be home probably 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, something like that. So anyhow, hope everyone is having a great week, and hope you have a great weekend coming up. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.